Now we're going to continue our baby-themed conversation by talking about babies who make it past those first few months and hopefully thrive. We'll also look at how babies are supposed to develop. Joining us now is Dr. Elizabeth Simpson. She's a general pediatrician at Children's Mercy Hospital and the medical director of routine newborn services at Truman Medical Center. She's been practicing for 30 years, and Beth, so nice to have you. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you.
Why are human babies born at 9 months and, say, not at 12 months? What's the evolution? What's the biological reason why we're born at 9 months?
Well, babies can't be too big or they wouldn't be able to get out.
Yes.
So not only their head, but their entire body, a uterus, can only hold so many pounds of baby. So they have to come out.
And has it always been this way? You go back millions of years, was it 9 months or do we know?
Well, there, with some recent findings and evolutionary studies, they think that maybe it was easier before people started walking on 2 feet instead of four. That's one of the premises out there. I'm not sure how much is actually totally known as fact.
Would it be better off for babies if they could be inside for 12 months instead of nine?
Well, babies learn a lot from being outside the womb, so I think it's probably better if babies go ahead and be born. Sometimes their parents really don't know what to expect, though, so it's very hard. They think they're going to have about a 3 or 4 month old baby when the baby comes out, first time parents in particular. So it's a lot different than what they're expecting.
Well, if our listeners have questions about the development of their babies and what they're seeing, and we have an expert here in the studio, Dr. Elizabeth Simpson, our number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Well, Beth, let's turn to premature births and preemies. What percentage of newborns these days are born premature?
Well, if you look at 38 weeks and above, we really want to see that about 10%. Unfortunately, in the past, there have been a lot of elective deliveries, and so people would think, oh, my baby's term anytime after 37 weeks, and so people would plan sometimes inductions of their labor or a C-section based on the fact that it was someone else's birthday in the family. They wanted them to have the same birthday and that sort of thing. And so now in the last year or so, there have been a lot of attention to waiting until more than 39 weeks as long as there are no problems with the mother's health or the baby's health, and it's just purely elective.
So people have been pushing that envelope and wanting to deliver sooner for reasons of birthdays and other reasons?
It's very uncomfortable to be pregnant past 36 weeks. So women start to feel very uncomfortable. They would just
They're
really
saying
love
enough.
To, yeah, yeah, they would really love to get it over with, and the odds that your baby is going to be fine are pretty good, so they would take that risk, the increased risk, just to go ahead and get it over with.
What do you advise moms who are thinking about going a little bit early? What's your 2 cents?
So 39 weeks is a good number. We really try to wait until after 39 weeks or let the baby decide and go into labor naturally as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And if it's a scheduled cesarean section, we still recommend waiting till after 39 weeks. The babies are going to be healthier. Babies that are between 37 and 39 weeks have about a 20% chance of ending up in the intensive care unit. And that's very depressing if you're a mom and you have a sick baby. Plus, it's hard on your baby.
Yeah, that was sort of our experience. We ended up, our first one, we ended up in the it's Children's Mercy Hospital, and on a dark, stormy, rainy night at 3 o'clock in the morning. Right. It wasn't what I had in mind.
No, not
just
at
a little
all.
Bit early, too, a couple weeks.
Yeah. Makes a big difference. Every week really counts. When we look at babies, even once they're born, an experienced pediatrician can get pretty close to the number of weeks of age they are, and no other time in life, if I see a 2-year-old, I can't tell you that they are 2 years and 3 weeks or whatever. But as an experienced pediatrician, I can look at a baby and tell you that baby's probably 3 weeks, that baby's probably 4 or 5. There's a big difference every week.
And you can tell how old they are for how long.
So
when does your magical touch lose your ability to really tell how old somebody is?
So once they get past 6 months, it's a little bit harder. You can kind of group babies together. And so, and of course, if the baby is early, then sometimes it's a little more difficult to tell.
Now, here we are talking about the birth of my first son, and tonight he's graduating from high school.
Hey.
So, and what a beautiful
That's great.
Day for that to be happening.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you, and to him especially,
yeah.
I guess. But I guess we deserve some of that too,
definitely,
don't we?
Definitely.
Yeah. Again, our phone number here, if you have questions about the development of your baby, what's normal, what's natural, what should be happening, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org, or you can tweet us again at KCUR UpToDate. What are the survival rates today? You know, Beth, as you look at newborns, you know, today compared to 20 or 30 years ago, especially when it comes to preemies, what are we seeing there?
Well, we've made tremendous strides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and not only in prematurity survival, but in the quality of that life. It's just great.
And what's the survival rate today compared to 20 or 30 years ago?
I can't really quote that number for you.
Yeah. But it's a quantum leap ahead of where it was.
Exactly. Yeah. If you look at in the United States, there are about 4 million deliveries every year, and only about 6% end up in the intensive care units. And so the great majority of the population of babies born in the United States are very healthy.
Oh, that's good. Kids are born premature. Why? What's happening?
So there's a lot of debate as to all the reasons. Some people feel like it's an infectious disease. A lot of women, especially if they are uninsured, have very poor access to health care. Unfortunately, we have...
We were just talking about during our first
right.
segment today, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there are women that have problems with substance abuse. And that is a big negative impactor on infant development.
So if a woman is using drugs, she's pregnant, why does the body give birth early? What happens there?
Well, some of them elevate the mom's blood pressure. Sometimes they're associated with poor nutrition in the mom and other causes because that sort of goes hand in hand with substance abuse.
And the body just simply says it's time to give birth now and not, we're not going to wait any longer for this
right,
to happen.
Right.
Because the body, it can't deal with the second body inside the mom? Is that what?
It's hard to say, but some of the drugs also make muscles contract. And, of course, the uterus is a muscle, so it contracts. And that's part of it, too. There's a variety of reasons, some of which... You know, also if the mom is ill or has infections, if the mom's health herself is poor, then, of course, the baby is likely to go ahead and be born.
How quickly can you tell if a newborn, a premature infant, is going to have struggles of one kind or another?
You mean developmental
yes,
struggles?
Once the birth takes place, how long does it take you to figure out, okay, we might have some issues here?
So... I'm not sure your question, if you mean in the nursery or after they go home.
Well, even in the nursery, right after they're born, can you tell just visually, you know, if this baby, Beth, might have some problems?
You mean developmental problems?
Yes, right.
Okay. So what we mostly look for is the tone, the neurologic tone of the infant, and we look for symmetry. We look and see if the right side seems to be as strong as the left side, if the baby moves their arms as much as their legs. Of course, things like seizures will show up sometimes. Once the baby goes home, we look for, as a general pediatrician, one of the most fun things I do is to take a two-month-old baby and I try to get them to smile at me.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, that is really fun. And if they were a full-term baby, 95%+ of the time I can get them to smile at me by 2 months of age. And then I can kind of relax and say, oh, this baby recognizes people, recognizes that smile. That means not only are they, their brain actually responds. And even if one side is a little bit higher tone than the other, it's really going to be okay because they smile. Their brain is pretty normal.
So that smile tells you a whole lot. Just that simple act of a smile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's someone who's been practicing this kind of medicine for 30 years? You must be pretty good at making a baby smile. What's your technique?
I'm pretty good, yeah.
What do you do?
So babies see best at about arm's length. And so I hold them at about arm's length, and then I always pick them up. It's no good if you just lay them down on the table. That's not as much fun.
Why do you? Because it's more fun for you?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll buy
Plus
that.
Plus, it's easier to hold the arm's length. So, because I'm holding them at my arm's length. So besides, I'm a pediatrician. Of course, I love to hold babies, right? So by definition, so I pick up the baby and I hold them at about arm's reach, and I try to get their attention. And that way, I can, if they don't really want to look at my face, they think I'm ugly or whatever, I can turn them so that I can make sure they see my face, and then I can get them to smile.
Do you say anything or do anything to sort of coax that smile out?
Sure. I talk to them.
You talk to them?
I say, let me see your big smile.
Yeah. So you're making me smile right now. So
yeah.
You must be really good at what you do.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Lots of phone calls for Dr. Elizabeth Simpson. Again, she's general pediatrician at Children's Mercy Hospital and the medical director of routine newborn services at Truman Medical Center. Let's go to some calls now. And Mary Ann from Lee Summit, good morning.
Hi, I wanted to know how important, you know how on the internet you have your little internet file, you know, on your baby, and then you have your what to expect the first couple of years, and you check, how important is it hitting all those developmental milestones right on? Because I swear to you, if your kid's not rolling over the minute they come out of the womb, you know, and the mommy comparisons, you know, start as soon as you, you know, give birth. How, like, if they're not right on target for that, when do you start getting concerned?
Well, most of the developmental milestones that they list for a certain age, they will tell you a certain percentage. Like they will say at about 75 percentile. So, in other words, if you say rolling over is listed as at 4 months, well, that means that about 75% of the kids that are 4 months old can roll over, but another 25% still can't. So you don't really worry about those milestones unless they fail multiple ones.
Meaning?
Okay, got it.
So
meaning they can't do it by 5 months or 6 months?
No, really what I mean is like, so by 6 months, if they're not rolling, they don't attempt to sit up at all, they don't keep their arms straight and lift their head up, they fail all of those, then, you know, or several of them, then that's a concern.
So if you're in a mommy me play group and one mom's kids, you know, has got the trifecta of rolling over, sitting up, and sleeping through the night at 2 months,
yeah,
not to worry, because she's probably fibbing.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Most children will not do that. So there's always going to be a 10th percentile or somebody doing one thing early. But what you're looking for is, you know, several things going.
Okay, great.
Mary Ann, thank you for the good call.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, with all the information on the internet these days, you know, are parents, Beth, more sort of hyper aware of, you know, where their child should be at what point, and are quick to call you up and say, uh-oh, you know, I might have an issue, more so now than they used to be?
I think maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
I think a little bit more. But I think most people, especially with their first baby, they don't really have a lot of comparison. And so sometimes they do worry a lot if they hear, you know, someone whose baby is the same age is doing something their baby can't. So I think there's a lot of anxiety.
The competition begins
early
in life, doesn't it?
Right.
Again, our phone number here, if you have questions about the development of your baby, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Jennifer from Prairie Village, you're on with Dr. Elizabeth Simpson. Good morning.
Hi. Along those same lines, I had read that it might not be good for babies to walk super early because the crawling is really important. And I was wondering if you could comment on that, and if it's a super good thing if your baby crawls really early so that they crawl longer, or what do you know? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. Talk to us about crawling.
Okay. So there were some studies that were done back in the 70s where they actually looked at crawling, and they made these conclusions that if the babies didn't crawl, then they didn't read as well, or that they felt like that crawling was sort of important to that integration process. But those studies have been redone, and actually no association is found with that. So we in the United States, fortunately, have had this back to sleep campaign for the last 20 years. And because of that, our babies really don't crawl as much. They really, there's been enough public awareness that most people don't put their baby on their tummies that much and to sleep. And so the baby's really, before, if your mom put you on your sleep, on your tummy to sleep and you didn't want to sleep, you tried to crawl. And now we know that the back is back to sleep is right. And so the babies really don't spend a lot of time on their tummies. So we see less babies that are actually crawling.
So
we
babies
see,
just aren't crawling. They're
not
developing
much.
Those skills and that strength as much as they were in the past.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not as much. So we don't. And and in the meantime, there have been studies that said crawling was really not a big important developmental thing for your organization and reading like they thought.
Yeah, it's funny. These standards do change all the time. Medicine is always evolving. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, my doctor for years was always telling me to take 2 baby aspirin. Last time I visited him, he said, don't bother with the 2 baby aspirin anymore. That's passe.
Right.
You know, and it's just interesting, which I guess means all these standards are important, but maybe take a lot of them with a grain of salt, Beth, or...
Well, yeah, if it's brand new and there's only one study that says it, it's really probably better not to just jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
Because one study can be just as easily refuted by another study.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes the studies are not well done. And if it takes a lot of training and knowledge of statistics to sometimes be able to tell if they're well done or not. So...
Let's get one more phone call before a break at 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Evelyn from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I was kind of thinking you mentioned that women that are on drugs or having to abuse or this or that. I've had lots of friends that had premature babies, and they were very healthy women, into health foods and whatnot. And, of course, me personally, I chose home birth. I was in touch with my body. I didn't even do the sonogram, which were brand new at the time. I didn't even want anything done. And I had a wonderful midwife. It was illegal, actually, because I was on the Kansas side, which I think is absurd. Women can be in touch with their own bodies. And, I just thought, what? I had friends where the baby was almost out and retreated back in and was born with a little cone head. And she was a very healthy woman. So it's not just women that are, you know, maybe on the minority list. I don't know. It's not just them. That's what I wanted to make sure, because there's a lot of women out there that have had premature.
Hey, Evelyn, what about this notion, Beth, that not all premature babies, as Evelyn is pointing out, are unhealthy? Some of them do just fine.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate the call in that we do. A lot of babies are born prematurely for no good reason.
And the mothers aren't unhealthy, we're talking about.
Through no fault whatsoever. We don't know why. So we can only try to modify things that we know about, and sometimes babies are born. Unfortunately, you know, hospitals are kind of like car seats for me, and we want our babies to be as healthy as possible, and we try very hard in the hospitals to make it a home-like experience. We do a lot of skin-to-skin as soon as the baby's born, and we room in. We keep the babies with their moms because we know that's where babies and moms belong, is together. So we try to keep the hospital experience a very positive experience for our family.
And all that has sort of changed in the last, 15, 20 years? Or help me there.
Right. Yeah. It's gotten a lot more, become a lot higher priority even in the last year or two.
Right.
And so we are really working hard to improve our breastfeeding rates and just improve our experience for our families overall, and keeping the moms and babies together, skin-to-skin contact, and just improving that. And that improves the health of the mom and the baby.
Okay, let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about how babies develop with Dr. Elizabeth Simpson. Again, we'll take your phone calls at 816-235-2888 and our email address uptodate@kcur.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, this hour we're visiting with Dr. Elizabeth Simpson. She's a general pediatrician at Children's Mercy Hospital and the medical director of routine newborn services at Truman Medical Center. She's been practicing for 30 years. We're wondering, parents, do you remember the first few months of your newborn's life? What scared you? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org, or you can tweet us at kcur up to date. Well, Greg emailed us this, Beth. My child is expecting twins later this summer. It is her second pregnancy. Any advice on what to expect, both coping with the next 3 months of pregnancy and after delivery? And all I've got to say is best of luck to you and yours, right?
Twins are wonderful. I especially love them when they're someone else's. I've never had twins myself, personally. Yeah, but a lot of my partners that are pediatricians actually have twins, because twins are more common with a little bit older maternal age.
Oh, there you
and
go.
And so a lot of professional women have twins, even if they haven't had infertility problems.
I was going to say, and the reason for the more common factor of more twins with older folks is why then?
It's hormonal.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the obstetrician could probably answer that better, but I know that it's hormonal and I know that it's true. Most women start to get pretty uncomfortable in the last two or three weeks of pregnancy, and people with twins, of course, get more uncomfortable early on.
Yeah.
There just gets to be a space problem, and of course, it's a lot higher risk. So prenatal care becomes so important to make sure both twins are still growing well,
mm-hmm.
both twins are still active. When the babies go home, it's 24/7 with one person. It's nice to have some help with twins.
Mm-hmm.
We love FMLA. And when we talk about the first 3 months of life, they're so critically important for all newborns.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that now most mothers have that choice, most working mothers have the choice to stay home for the first 3 months or close to it, has been a huge improvement for the health of both the babies and their mothers, emotionally and physically. So with twins, if you can get some help either with dad or other extended family members, this is the time when you have a new baby to ask for help, even with one, let alone two.
Yeah, how much information do you give parents, whether it's one child, two or three for that matter, about, you know, what's coming down the road, how this is going to change your life, sleep patterns, all of that? How much sort of counseling do you do on the front end to sort of help people get ready for all that?
Well,
those days well.
Pediatricians generally have not done a lot of prenatal visits. And so it's something that insurance companies have not reimbursed for. And so usually there will be maybe one class of your childbirth class that will talk about infant behavior, or maybe they'll recommend a book. A lot of pediatricians will do a prenatal visit. Some will do a prenatal phone call, at least, where prospective parents, especially with their first baby, if they're interviewing a pediatrician, can call and get information about the pediatrician's office and what to expect. What information that you give to people at the time that they're in the hospital and delivering, my experience is it's really hard for them to retain that
mm-hmm.
information. They're
mm-hmm.
worried about feeding their baby. They're just excited that this baby is here. And so those that information needs to be given with the next few outpatient visits to their pediatricians. And newborns need a lot of visits. You know, the standard is to see a pediatrician within 48 to 72 hours after discharge.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, usually about at a week or so later, and then again at 2 months. And so you get to develop a relationship, hopefully, with your pediatrician, and it's mutually enjoyable.
Well, Greg, we wish you the best of luck. Congratulations, and call us in a few weeks and let us know how it's going. We'd like to hear from you. Let's go back to some phone calls again, 816-235-2888. The development of your baby, what's normal, are some of the targets you should be thinking about? That's our topic today. Again, 816-235-2888. Joanna from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, thanks.
When I first had my baby, she had terrible colic, and as a new mother with postpartum, walking around with my baby at 2 and 3 in the morning, I would call the nurses at the hospital and ask them what to do. And, of course, you know, that's not their job to counsel me through a colic. I always wish that there would have been a hotline of, like, maybe volunteer women who could help women in my situation, kind of talk us through that sort of thing, or help, just somehow help at 2 in the morning. That was my biggest problem when I first had my baby.
That's a good point. And there are not as many resources as could be so helpful to people in that similar circumstance. You know, we know that babies cry a lot, hence the term cry baby. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so usually around 6 to 7 weeks of life is the absolute worst crying. And so by then...
And why is that?
It's a brain thing, and I think they start to be able to communicate a little bit. And mm-hmm. they just, that's all they do. And it's just as they start to almost be able to smile, they just cry a lot. And so there are a lot of books and YouTube videos and different things, the baby whisperer, just like the horse whisperer, different things. So some of those are very helpful, have helpful techniques for families to help with a colicky baby.
Yeah. But, I hope that helps, Joanna.
It does. Thank you very much. I sure appreciate your time and your show.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of books, you know, are there two or three books that you would advise, you know, new parents who are, you know, looking for information, looking for advice, books that have proven and sort of held up over the years as being pretty good standards?
Well, the What to Expect the First Year of Life is a very popular book. And then the American Academy of Pediatrics actually puts out some great books. When one of my residents has a new baby, I often will try to get them that book because it has such great common sense advice. So there's one that's Birth to 5 Years of Age.
Mm-hmm. And do you know who wrote that one?
I'm not sure who the editor. It's published by the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Okay. All right. Danielle writes us this. What's a good expected delivery time for twins, doctor? What types of developmental issues should I be concerned about?
Well,
more twin questions.
Yeah, twins generally come more the 38 weeks just because of the size of the uterus and how much a uterus can hold, sort of.
There's a maximum capacity there,
right,
I gather.
Right, uh-huh.
Yeah, how uncomfortable is that? I mean, for I'm a guy, obviously. How uncomfortable is that for a bonehead like me to – how sensitive should I be to that situation?
I think people, when they, you know – with twins, you should be very sensitive.
Yeah.
Steve, I would be very sensitive. You know, people can't sit down without keeping their legs really widely apart because their stomach is so big. It just sort of hangs over. And, yeah, it's in a lot of back pain. A lot of back pain. Usually.
Just from the weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. I cut you off.
Okay.
There. Yeah.
So usually twins, if we can get them to 38, 39 weeks, we're ecstatic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you get nervous at what? How many weeks is a cutoff for when you should be nervous about a baby being born?
Well, you know,
whether it's twins or just a single baby,
right? Yeah. Well, babies that are born before 37 weeks are definitely more likely to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as you know, every week is precious before then.
Mm-hmm. So you're trying to coax out as many weeks as you possibly
can
get.
Right.
What are some of the earliest birth times these days where babies have survived and survived in a fairly healthy way?
So, you know, 28 is a very good goal. 28 weeks, we have really very good.
That's 7 months. Yeah.
Right.
That's
uh-huh.
2 months off the typical time.
Right. And we have babies that survive and do well much younger than that. Even, you know, 23, 24 weeks, usually around 24 weeks is kind of the earliest that you can hope for to have very with a reasonable risk of complications, although a lot of those babies that are born less than 28 weeks will have a you know, about half of them will have developmental issues, and about a fourth of them will have severe developmental issues.
You're talking about a lot of time in the hospital for those infants, though, right?
Right, yeah. So usually we can't send babies home until they're pretty close to around 35 weeks. So if you're born at 25 weeks, that's 10 weeks of nursery stay.
What about for parents in that situation? What about the care and support for them in the hospital? How much support and care is there for them in a situation like that?
Well, we try very hard, both at Children's Mercy and at Truman Medical Center, to be sensitive to the needs of those parents and social workers, Ronald McDonald houses, things mm-hmm. like that. We try to support them as best we can, child life specialists, but there are a lot of needs.
That book you recommend is Caring for Your Baby and Young Child, the fifth edition of Birth to Age 5 by Stephen P. Shelloff, I guess. Yeah, that's the one you were talking about there. Again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the development and developmental benchmarks for your baby. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. We're visiting with Dr. Beth Simpson. She's with Truman Medical Center and Children's Mercy Hospital. If you have a question, this would be a good time to call, 816-235-2888. How often do you face problems with full-term infants, Beth? How typical is that?
Well, about 10% of term infants will have some problem that needs attention. Either maybe they are jaundiced.
10%.
Something. Maybe they had a low blood sugar. They had some issue that needs help. So,
and you know pretty quickly there might be an issue just by looking at them?
Well, the routine newborn nursery where I spend a lot of my time is sort of the triage unit for the hospital. So we either we know what to look for as far as signs of infection or illness in the baby, and we say, oh gosh, you have no problems, stay with your mom in your room and breastfeed and room in, and or yes, you have medical problems, you need a higher level of care.
You know, how do you break the news to an excited young mom and dad about their newborn might be having one problem or another, and there's a potential for it to be somewhat serious? How do you approach that? Because that's got to be a really difficult moment.
Of course, it's very disappointing, but I think most people understand that we want to be very conservative with newborns. We really want to investigate any even potential problem. Mm-hmm. So we would rather be safe than sorry. And so we really try hard to identify problems early and address them quickly.
How do you break the news? What do you say? Just very directly?
I just usually introduce myself and tell them what the problem that we've identified, and explain to them how we want to be very conservative. And mm-hmm. so we will check this out, and hopefully it will turn out to be not such a big problem. But
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. Helen from Kansas City, Missouri. Helen, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thank you, Helen.
Good. I just wanted to make a comment that I was born in 1972, and I was born at 27 weeks.
Wow.
And
here you are today.
Yes, and I was 2 pounds, 4 ounces, and I was in an incubator for 3 months. And I went down to 1 pound, 13 ounces, 12 inches long. And
oh, my goodness.
I have had no problems. And the doctor said that I would have, you know, bad eyesight, which is, you know, that's not any big deal.
Yeah.
My mom was had 3 other children before me, and she always just said, you know, that was just the way it was. She was very healthy, and I had no problems. And they called me Little Fat Helen in the nursery.
Yeah.
And she said, even though you were small, you were little. So
wow.
There's hope for a parent, for babies. I just want to make that comment.
Yeah, that's a great call, Helen. Yep. Thank you very
much.
That's
great. That's what success stories really keep us going.
And that's not all that unusual?
No, it's not. But the big, not today especially, but, you know, I'm not exactly sure the year. I think it was probably about 1962. You know, John F. Kennedy had a premature baby that was, I think, maybe 32 or 33 weeks, and the baby did not make it. So
I remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
So the survival and survival, healthy survival, has really gone up in the last few, last few decades.
Well, Beth, it's been great to have you. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for answering so many good questions so well. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Simpson. She's a pediatric specialist at Children's Mercy Hospital and Truman Medical Center. You can find more information on all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the program, Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte joins us to discuss how the department aims to prevent violence and better engage the community. Our show is produced by Stephen Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.